a scientific report about a cluster approach to the structure of heavy nuclei by Schneidman.
Well, thank you very much. And first of all, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. And it's a pleasure for me to present here the result of our work. And this work is about cluster approach to the structure of heavy nuclei. And this work was mainly done in our group from Bogolyubov Laboratory of Theoretical Physics and partly also from in China. Here's the content of my talk. I will start with a short introduction and try to describe some proofs that clustering degrees of freedom are really important in the structure of medium and heavy mass nuclei. So in the next part I will present some details of our model very briefly, just very basic ideas of this model, and then I will show some results. Of course, this is not all result which we obtained, but due to the lack of time, I will only present the results on the parity splitting and dipole transition in actinides and rare earth nuclei, and also I will show some results, more detailed results, on the structure of spectra of on an example of plutonium-230. And then I will end up with conclusion. So when we speak about clustering, usually what comes in mind is such a molecular type structure. So if we have nuclei with mass A, we have two clusters. It can be separated into two clusters, A1 and A2. And we have two degrees of freedom, which generally mainly describe this system as a relative distance, which describe a difference between distance between the mass of two clusters and the mass asymmetry, which describe a partition of nucleon between these two clusters. But this picture is probably oversimplified, and in different mass areas, one has to take consider it more in details. For example, in light nuclei, usually people do, we fix the mass asymmetry and consider dynamics in a relative distance. And in this case, clusters can penetrate each other, and of course, in this case, one has to consider explicitly the antisymmetrization of wave function. So generally, wave function is considered as a wave function of one cluster, another cluster, and the relative motion. And here's an antisymmetrization. But this procedure technically is very complicated and can be carried out only up to neon 20, for example, on nucleus like this. And if we want to describe cluster effects in more heavier nuclei, we have to apply another approach in which we fix a relative distance in the touching configuration. And in this case, since the clusters penetration of the clusters is small, we can more or less neglect antisymmetrization between the nucleons which belong to different clusters. But of course, we cannot neglect it completely because, for example, some nucleons can have probability to be in one cluster or in another cluster, at least upper nucleons. And in this case, we have to consider superposition of different cluster configuration, not just one, but several others as well. So very roughly, the wave function can be treated as this. So the wave function of nucleus with Z protons and IA total mass can be treated as a mononucleus configuration where we have no clusters with some probability alpha, with some amplitude alpha, and we have an alpha particle denuclear system, cluster system, lithium, and so on. And if we go, and using this approach, I should say still in the beginning, we described the ground state spectra of actinides and also alpha decay properties of some actinide nuclei. And if we go further in quadrupole moment, we can also consider more heavier cluster system. For example, this is for isotopes of uranium. We can consider also mononucleus and some configurations with strontium plus xenon, zirconium plus tellur, and so on. And to our theoretical task is to find the weight of this different cluster system in the wave function, in the intrinsic wave function. And to do this, we have to solve a Schrödinger equation in mass asymmetry coordinate. So actually, there's many situations where cluster effect is important. Here, I only counted a few of them. First of all, it's if there's many clusters effect in very light nuclei. But here's, I will start with nucleus around mass 40, and in nuclei like calcium 40 or titanium 44, we have a super deformed and hyper deformed bands, which is in many approaches was shown that these bands can be really a cluster band. And this comes from a different approach, from cluster approach, from shell models, and so on. And another region where clusters effect is important is reflection asymmetric deformation in actinides and rare earth nuclei. And another situation is a strongly elongated fission isomers in heavy nuclei. And due to the lack of time, I will only show some proofs about these two points, not about this. And so if we take a look on the excitation spectrum of nucleus, for example, in actinide mass region, we will see the following situation. We have a ground state band, which consists of 0 plus, 2 plus, 4 plus, and so on. Usually it is rotational or vibrational origin. And in addition, in this nuclei, we have a negative parity states, negative parity rotational bands, which is very low in energy. And these bands connected by strong dipole and octopole transition, which means that probably the nucleon structure of these bands is more or less the same. So these bands can be considered as a unified alternating parity band. And here we come to what is the difference from usual band? What you see at low angular momentum, negative parity states is shifted up with respect to the positive parity one. And this can be described by the parity splitting, which I think first was introduced by Jaws and Brentano. And the idea of parity splitting is the following. So about the ground state band, we know moment of inertia. So we can calculate, for example, virtual 1 plus, 3 plus, 5 plus states, and so on. And when you take a difference between 1 minus and virtual 1 plus, 3 minus and virtual 3 plus, and this will be more or less a parity splitting. And if you look in the picture, here is the parity splitting for this certain nucleus. If you look in the picture, you will see that the parity splitting starts with a quite large value. In this case, it's not large, but it can be up to 1 MeV. And with increase of angular momentum, it goes almost to zero. And in pair with this effect, we also can see that the dipole moment is increasing with increase of angular momentum. So the theory should explain these effects. But first of all, let us speak about a little bit about the origin of the parity splitting and the low-lying negative parity band. So if you want to describe, it was shown long ago that the low appearance of a low negative parity, low-lying negative parity rotational bands and strong dipole transition means that nucleus can exhibit some reflection asymmetric deformation. And if we use the language of conventional language of octopole and quadrupole deformation and expand shape in expansion like this, if we have no octopole deformation, we will have a spheroidal type shape or ellipsoidal. And if we add, in addition, an octopole deformation, the shape of nucleus becomes like a pear. And this has some physical consequence. Because in the intrinsic coordinate frame, we have two systems which only differs by sign of octopole deformation, but otherwise they are physically completely identical. So if we plot potential energy as a function of this beta free zero, this potential energy should be a symmetric function of beta free. And in this case, we will have two solutions. One of is a positive parity or symmetric solution in this potential, and another is asymmetric solution in this potential. And if we can, in principle, transform a shape of nucleus from this limit to this limit. And if this process is physically impossible, like in case or physically unlikely to do it, probability, so we will have a very, very big barrier between these two configurations. This means that there is no penetration from this minima to this minima. And such, in this case, we will have an unperturbed rotational band, octopole rotational band. So we will have an interleaved 0 plus, 1 minus, 2 plus, 3 minus, and so on. And such situation is usually realized in molecular physics. But in nuclear physics, the situation is different because we have octopole vibration, and the barrier is finite. And in this case, we will have, a lower state will be symmetric, and the second, first excited state will be asymmetric. And the distance between these states will depend on the height of this barrier. So the higher barrier, the smaller distance. So at the limiting case of infinite barrier, we will have degenerate states. But if there is no barrier, let's assume this is oscillator, the difference between will be just h bar omega. And this is the reason why the parity splitting appears in nuclei. The barrier is finite. But what is the origin of this octopole deformation? And if we speak from a point of view of cluster model, we can assume that we have an alpha cluster, the alpha cluster system, which consists of alpha particle on the surface of a heavy cluster from the left side, for example, and from the right side. And in between, we have a mononucleus configuration, which is marked here by 1. And we have some vibration, which alpha particle goes first to this nucleus and then appears from the other side. And in this case, we will have, if this energy of alpha particle is very small comparing to the binding energy of nucleus, the barrier will be very high, and this means that the parity splitting will go to 0. And there should, therefore, there should be some correlation between the energy of alpha particle and the parity splitting. And we can see it very easily on the following picture. Here is the energy of 1 minus state, but actually this is a parity splitting for 1 minus. And on the right side is simply calculated the energy of alpha particle in the nuclear system. And you can see really this, indeed there's very strong correlation between these values. So the lower energy of alpha particle, the smaller parity splitting, or energy of 1 minus state. Another possible proof that cluster decrease of freedom is really reason for appearance of reflection asymmetric deformation comes from the consideration of alpha decay. For example, actually what in this picture what we have that alpha particle appears with some probability on the surface of heavy nucleus. And this means that we have some non-zero alpha decay probability. And this alpha decay probability we can also calculate from experimental data using time half-life of alpha decay. So we can take an experimental value for alpha decay and extract the probability to penetrate through the outer barrier. And when we have a spectroscopic factor of the probability to find alpha outside of the heavy nucleus, experimental one. And this is plotted here for many actinide and transactinide nuclei. Again, you can see, so the higher probability to find alpha particle, this means that a lower energy of alpha particle and small parity splitting. And you can see yes, here should be inverse correlation between these two quantities. And then you can see indeed this correlation really exists. So in fact, from these two proofs, generally it's too hard to theoretically to explain that, to prove that a cluster approach can be used. But there's many, many experimental proofs of this. What we can do further, we can extend our model to more elongated shapes. And here you can see potential energy for uranium-232 and as a function of different mass asymmetries. And you can see there's some minima. This minima corresponds to alpha particle system. This minima corresponds to lead plus neon. This neodym plus germanium and so on. And here is a quadruple moment of this system. And you can see that if we are working close to the ground state, that only possible system is the alpha particle system because this is separated by a huge barrier. But if we are going to scission point or hyperdeformed state, this configuration start also play an important role. And actually, this configuration, if hyperdeformed state exists, this configuration should be identical with these states, more or less. And we can see this. Since this configuration is already too heavy and polarization effect is important, we have to take we cannot take a ground state deformation. We have to calculate deformation of this state. And you can see here the calculated potential energy surface as a function of deformation of these two fragments. And you can see here the two minima. This minima is very this minima is elongated minima and corresponds to scission point configuration. And this minima corresponds to, I think, probably corresponds to hyperdeformed state. This is very compact minima. And if we calculate the characteristics of this minima, like energy, excitation energy, rotational constant, a moment of inertia, quadruple and octuple moments, it is presented here, and in some cases where it's possible, it is compared with experimental results obtained by this experimental group. And you can see there's really very close the calculated value for this, the nuclear system is very close. So we may conclude from this that hyperdeformed state can be really a cluster state. So now let me speak a little bit more in details about our model. So first of all, what we did in the beginning, we just consider 1 degree of freedom, which is mass asymmetry coordinate, and solve calculate a potential energy in this degree of freedom and solve a Schrödinger equation. And in this case, we have two states, intrinsic wave functions. One symmetric and one asymmetric, and we have a d function is a rotational function, so to construct a total wave function we have to take into account the rotation as well. And the intrinsic wave function is obtained by following Schrödinger equation with moments of inertia calculated in this way for the cluster system. And due to this symmetrization, we will have, if k value is equal to zero, which is usually happens for ground state system, ground state even systems, we will have 0 plus, 1 minus, 2 plus, and so on. But for odd even or even odd system, we will have non-zero value of k, and we will have parity doublet states, k plus, k minus, k plus minus, k plus 1 plus minus, and so on. And the potential energy is calculated like this. So to calculate this potential energy for certain cluster system, we take a bodying energy. Here it is taken for ground state deformation, and we take an interaction between these two fragments. And all the energy is normalized by the bonding energy of a nucleus. Nucleus potential is calculated as sum of column and nuclear part, and for nuclear part we take a double folding potential with Migdal force, which is a very simple case of Skirn force. And potential energy looks like this. So if we calculate it as a function of mass asymmetry, we will see the rapid increase. So if we are working close to the ground state, we can simply stay in this area and just assume that there is nothing outside. And as a function of relative distance, it has a pocket which corresponds to a touching configuration, as we liked. And here is a, so after this calculating potential energy, we can diagonalize a Hamiltonian, and here is a result for the parity splitting of different isotopes of radium, thorium, uranium, and plutonium. The points is an experimental data, and the lines is our calculation, and you can see in most cases the agreement is really, really good between experiments and our calculations. There's some exceptions, for example, like here, but this is probably due to a band crossing which is not included, taken into account in our model at high angular momentum. And really, the question is why the parity splitting is decreasing. In our model, the answer is quite simple. So this is a Hamiltonian in mass asymmetry, and if we calculate it for mononucleus, which corresponds to psi equal to zero, when the energy is like this, so it's energy for zero angular momentum and some rotational energy. And for mass asymmetry equal to alpha, it's psi equal to one, so it's alpha particle in the nuclear system. We have a similar expression, but the moment of inertia here corresponds to the nuclear system. And as a rule, the nuclear or total moment of inertia of the nuclear system. As a rule, this moment of inertia is larger than the moment of inertia of mononucleus. And due to this fact, with increase of angular momentum, even if there is no minima on alpha particle DNS, the minimum will develop with angular momentum, as you can see from this figure. And due to this, we have even if we have no barrier between these two configurations, with increase of angular momentum, this barrier will appear, and the parity splitting will decrease. And also, since the parity splitting will decrease, this means that reflection asymmetric deformation will be stabilized with angular momentum. And as a result of this, the dipole moment will be increasing function of angular momentum. And here is the experimental and theoretical results for radium 226. The point is experiment. And you can see again, there's a rather good agreement between this, between our calculation and experiments. Here is another example of calculation of dipole moment for plutonium 230. And you can see here is again a good agreement, but the main reason why I show it, we can see this staggering picture, which is not presented here. And this is staggering picture because in the case of radium, the alpha particle the nuclear system from the beginning is low in energy. So the octopole deformation is more or less stabilized already from the beginning of the band. And there is no, and the weight of alpha particle the nuclear system is more or less the same for positive and negative parity states. And why this is why there is no staggering. But in this case, the staggering disappears, and because in the case of plutonium, the alpha particle energy is 2 MeV higher in the beginning of the band, and even here it is not yet lower than the energy of mononucleus. So, and another example which I want to show you is a recent experiment which was done in China about barium 123. And in this experiment, for the first time, we measure very long bands, parity doublet rotational bands in barium 133, and moreover, we measure some dipole transition at high angular momentum. And this dipole transition was found to be a collective one, so they are very strong. And this is, but at the same time, there's almost no strong transition at the lower part of the band. And we did a calculation with using relativistic mean field, and we found that there's no minima corresponding to bit of free zero in this mean field calculation. However, we found that potential energy is very soft with respect to beta free. And the same result is obtained with our denuclear system model, but we can go further with our model because we can study how the potential energy surface will change with angular momentum. And we found that even though there is no octopole deformation at low angular momentum, we can find some critical angular momentum at which the alpha particle of the nuclear system will go lower than the mononucleus configuration. And this will mean that at this configuration, parity splitting should go almost to zero, and dipole transition would become very strong. And here's experimental results in our calculation. You can see that indeed in this region which we predicted, the experimental parity splitting goes almost to zero. This point, red and blue point, is for experiment. And as a some indication, it was nucleus 145 barium, which is with stable octopole deformation. And you can see that in this case, we start to describe parity splitting very good even from the beginning. But in this nuclear, our description is good only in the vicinity of a critical momentum, but not at smaller angular momentum. This is because the nucleus is odd nucleus, but it's more complicated story, and I don't want to state now on this now. And here's our prediction and our calculation and experimental value for BE1 to BE2 ratios. And you can see again that in this region, our prediction is quite good and in agreement with experimental data. And now, I don't have much time, but what I want to a little bit say, that we considered what I spoke before, it was about only one decrease of freedom. But actual spectra of a nucleus is much more complicated. There's much many bands which should be described as well. For example, if you want to describe a negative parity band, we should also describe one minus band and so on. And to do so, we have to take into account other degrees of freedom. And generally, there's 15 degrees of freedom in the dinuclear system. It's a relative motion of the clusters. R is fixed, but we still have two clusters, two angles which give us some relative rotation. We have rotation of the clusters, which is described by Euler angles, and we have intrinsic excitation. If the cluster is quadrupole deformed, we have beta and gamma degrees of freedom. And we, of course, have a nucleon transfer, which is described by mass asymmetry and charge asymmetries. And we can write total Hamiltonian for such a system. It looks very long, but it's not so complicated. This is a kinetic energy for mass asymmetry, for relative motion. This is a rotation, relative rotation. This is a rotation of each fragment. And this is a sort of a Bohr Hamiltonian for each fragment. And potential energy looks completely the same, but it should be considered as a function of many degrees of freedom in this case. And the schematic spectrum of this Hamiltonian can be given, can be shown like on this figure, is shown on this figure, and it is quite, so it doesn't change much if we change the parameters of this Hamiltonian. So if we neglect all the intrinsic excitation of the fragments, we will have only this part. So this is what we had before with mass asymmetry. We have also one minus band, we have zero plus band, which is corresponds to the first excited states in mass asymmetry. And we have a beta vibrational band, beta vibrational. If we take into account intrinsic excitation of fragment, we have a beta vibration, gamma vibration, and the octopole deformed band, which is built on this beta vibration. And gamma vibration plus octopole give this famous 2 plus to minus parity doublet bands, which is now very, which is now interested in, there's interest in the literature in these bands. And here's some calculation with this modified Hamiltonian for plutonium-230. On the left with experimental data for a certain band, and on the right with our calculation. You can see that in most cases there's a good agreement. And here is a zero plus. What is interesting, that the schematic Hamiltonian, which I showed you before, is very general. So, and this exists, this Hamiltonian actually you can find in all of these nuclei. So no other bands, you can, excluding single particle states, where no other bands persist in the spectra of this nuclei. And you can see here 0 plus 0 minus 1 minus band, and the parity doubly 2 plus 2 minus. And also what is interesting, we have, as a rule, in this nuclei we have a 0 plus, 2 0 plus band. One is a beta vibrational, and another is a mass asymmetry band. The only what is interesting, what this band is different experimentally, because by the decay pattern. For example, beta vibrational bands predominantly decay by E2 transition to a ground state band. And mass asymmetry band is usually decay to a negative parity band. And this is indeed seen experimentally, and it is you can see it here. This is a recent experiment of which concerned the structure of plutonium-230. And we study the decay from this mass asymmetry band to a ground state band and to a first octuple band. And here is experimental data, and this is our calculation. You can see we are rather close. And but and this so measurement of this transition was able by measuring this transition, experimentalists was able to conclude that this band is really of reflection symmetric structure. So probably I have no time anymore, so I will skip this part about isomeric state. I also just very briefly want to mention that using this approach, we can also describe a superdeformed bands and hyperdeformed bands, or bands in the superdeformed states and the hyperdeformed states. And here's an example of superdeformed states measured in plutonium-230. It's the bands in our calculation. You can see again quite a good agreement between them. And let me come to my conclusion. So we suggested a cluster interpretation of multiple negative parity bands in actinides and rare earth nuclei. And it was done assuming the collective mass asymmetry motion and all other motion which is related to the cluster structure. And using this approach, we were able to describe angular momentum dependence of parity splitting. We were able to describe beta B1, B2 values. And in overall, our calculation is in good agreement with experimental data. And what we have done in recently, we take into account the non-axially symmetric reflection asymmetric modes, which is the intrinsic mode of the nuclear system. And this help us to describe very complicated spectra which really exist in actinides and rare earth nuclei. And one of the conclusions which will, can be done from this calculation, this recent calculation, that a 0 plus states is, has a reflection asymmetric nature, and it can be explained in our model as a built on a first excited state in mass asymmetry degrees of freedom. So thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Is there any question or comment yet? Adam, please.
You showed that using of this model, many experimental results can be reproduced. But I think that the especially important is just to be able to reproduce electromagnetic transition probabilities, because these quantities are very sensitive to all details of the model. So, in a sense, congratulate to you. I congratulate you.
So, actually, we did calculation from... so, we're not only calculating the spectra, we also calculate electromagnetic transitions all the time. So, and in, usually, it is in good agreement.
Yes, please, Sigurd.
You showed this correlation between alpha cluster and alpha emission at the beginning. Now we know that there are also emissions of heavier particles like carbon-14, famous example from radium isotopes. I think your model would be also very useful to study this kind of emission of heavier particles. Did you already have time to look for this?
If I'm not mistaken, I think, Gürgen, you did such calculation with Sergei Kuklin for heavier cluster emission. So it was really done already. So and this model can be applied, and it was done.
Yes, Marek, please.
I have a question. If you can apply the same model to the much lighter systems, like when the alpha cluster structures were established, carbon, oxygen, and the related question, you somehow impose the existence of clusters. Do you consider also the the possible degree of freedom for the lighter clusters and neutrons, tritons, or you start from alpha particles?
No. So concerning your first question, of course the model can be applied to lighter systems. But it has, I think, like for oxygen, it makes no sense to apply this model, because what is the main point of this model? That we consider superposition of many clusters, not only alphas. But in oxygen, it's easier to simply consider alpha particles. And but the lightest limit which we can go, I think, it's around calcium. Calcium, titanium, and this calculation was done. So I didn't show it here, but in principle, we did such calculation. So, in principle, we can go lighter, but there's no actual reason to do this. And concerning the other question, we are not only consider alpha particles. So, we consider all these systems, all mass asymmetries. But in the case of actinides, there's other systems plays almost no role. But, for example, if we go to larger deformation, the other systems start to play a role also. And for example, in titanium, the lowest excitation is corresponding to alpha particle, but the second excited 0+ corresponds already to beryllium. So it should be taken into account in this case. But for heavy nucleus, already you can only stay in this region here. If I understand you correctly, I'm sorry.
My question was simple. How you define the cluster in your model? What does mean cluster?
Cluster means the two fragments in touching.
For any combination.
So we consider
of masses.
We consider system like this. So one cluster, another, and they're only in touching. So they keep kept in touching by the potential. So the potential has a core which forbids them to go inside each other. But we consider not only certain cluster configuration, here is a superposition of many, many systems.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, the last question, Emmanuel.
Yes, but if I understand well, the potential you showed before is the minima you have in the potential are due to shell closure, right?
Yeah.
So these clusters... The most probable configuration are connected to shell closures.
Yes, of course.
Right?
Yes.
So it means that the origin of the cluster here is more probable, more likely to be for clusters in which one or both fragments have some shell closing.
Yeah.
So it means that a cluster here are seen as a result of a shell effect.
Yes, you are completely right, but I want to just say that due to the potential, these shell closures can be slightly modified. So they are not exactly correspond to the shell closures of single nuclei. So it usually
yes, because you have another degree of freedom.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah,
the most important one is the fact that you have a shell effect.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, but another thing that...
May I ask...
Yes, please.
Another thing.
Quickly.
So, there are barriers between configurations. So, there are barriers between configurations. So, usually in the collecting models, it's possible to go from one configuration to another, okay, in a smooth way. In this case, this is not possible. So, the overlap between configurations is something that I understand this case, because it's not easily possible to go from one configuration to another. There are barriers to go through. So this overlap probably has some constraint. Because of the fact you cannot freely go from one configuration, which means the shape coexistence in this case is not considered. It cannot be included, right? Because you have barrier between different configurations.
You mean here, for example?
If I understand, each of these minima correspond to different clusters.
No, all these points correspond to some clusters.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, but due to this fact that some clusters has higher energy, we have a barriers between.
Yes, in this case, it's not possible to reproduce the shape of coexistence, because you cannot go from one configuration to another, because you have a barrier between them. So the overlap between configurations have some constraint. I mean, I cannot figure out how to do this, but It seems to me this is a completely different condition from usual collecting models, where you have one potential, one degree of freedom, which is deformation, for instance, and you can make different shapes to coexist. This is not the case here.
No, this is actually the case here as well, because, for example, here, if we are working here, this is a coexistence between mononucleus and alpha particle. This is, of course, only one minima, not two. If we have at larger deformation, we have a two minima. And this this barrier exists, but the mass in this mass asymmetry mass is in this part is very small. So this barrier can be penetrated quite well. Another point which I want to mention, in this simple mass one degrees of freedom model, probably it's not enough to describe a shape coexistence. Because what I showed late further, we have many other degrees of freedom. For example, we have a deformation of a heavy fragment. Even if we have a mononucleus, we have heavy clusters and alpha, heavy clusters can have different deformation. And this different deformation can have a minima, different minima as well. And this can be another reason for shape coexistence and smaller quadrupole moments. So in this situation, there can be several minima. For example, here you can see on this this is for certain the nuclear system, but this is a potential energy surface as a function of deformations, and you can see several minima here, which is not separated by a huge barrier. But to do this, you have to consider not only mass asymmetry but also intrinsic degrees of freedom over fragments. So this in principle is possible.
Okay, thank you. We have to stop the discussion now. So thank you again for your presentation. So, dear PAC member, now we have the coffee break with the poster session. So we will have the poster session up to 10:35, and at 10:35 we have meeting on the small room downstairs to select the best posters. Downstairs, yes. Thank you.